Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky. Okay. So, I didn't think this was real at first, but have you seen Ben Affleck's back tattoo?
No.
Google okay. It. Just look up Ben Lord. Affleck back tattoo. This is, I don't even know the words to describe it. It's like, it looks like a giant bruise,
well,
basically.
Here's how I know it's going to be good, is all I had to type was Ben Affleck BA, and it finished the rest of it for me. So I know it's going to be solid here.
It's a lot better than Ben Affleck BO, I can tell you that much right now.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
But I don't know. Okay, there's a better picture. It looks like it's supposed to be a phoenix or a dragon of some sort.
Okay,
but
why?
It looks like he got this drunk in like some back alley parlor, you know, tattoo parlor.
Oh, wait, okay.
Are you seeing this?
What? Well, okay, now wait a minute, though. Is that is real, though?
I was just trying to figure that out because I saw it on Twitter. And
okay, because I found it on CNN, and CNN says he claims it's the Phoenix tattoo is fake for a movie. So he's saying it's fake.
How Ben Affleck gaslit the world about his enormous back tattoo.
Is okay. It's riding a skateboard.
In this role, like he's that. Playing like a 14-year-old or what?
Well, yeah, that's what I want to know. Because see, the one, yeah, I don't know. Because then he's got the one on his arm. Is the one on his arm fake too?
Oh my god!
The shield.
This has to be right. Like, yeah, no Hollywood. When was the last time anybody of his caliber of fame got anything ridiculous like that? That's so permanent.
In 2016, Affleck told Extra the tat was fake for a movie, but he was recently photographed shirtless, and the colorful phoenix in flight was on full display. Huh.
See, I'm reading here. He told Extra TV that it's a fake for a movie.
But this story was what? January. Okay, this story was written on CNN March 19th, and it says he was recently photographed shirtless and the colorful phoenix was in flight.
Yes.
So maybe it's not.
That's right. There's a follow-up. It's real.
Wow.
We got to the bottom of that, didn't we? We are expert sleuths here on the Nasty Cast. This is episode 147. It's the closer preview featuring Greg Jewett. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. And joined by, as always, by Van Lee. Ben? What? Ben? Ben's not here, man.
Where'd he go?
I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. He sent us a picture of a van earlier today, so I think that he is probably traveling the countryside in a van. I don't know what he's doing. Perhaps he's looking for my igloo? Think he's going to come visit me?
You think?
I don't know.
It looked like the van was headed to the east, so I think he's going the other direction across the country.
That's true. It's dangerous. Yeah. And in any case, we don't have Van, but we do have Ron Rigney.
Triumphant return after a 1 week hiatus. Glad to be back.
God. One of you guys leaves me 1 week and the next week it's the other.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Am I that bad?
No. No, not at all.
Oh, okay. Sure. I mean, that sounded sincere.
I mean, I guess not. No. No, you know. I had spring break last week, so I had to go visit the family. You know how it is, so.
Ah, yes. It wasn't even listed as spring break on my kids' schedules. Like it was listed as like several days for parent teacher conferences, and one day was like just, I don't know, Easter or something. Cuz it's coming up.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, they don't even label it spring break, which is just lame. Just call it spring break, you hosers.
Well, it's probably not like spring there though. So it's probably just like
it's late winter. Yeah.
Yeah. Late winter break. Gloomy, depressing break.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no sun.
But I am I'm safe and sound in my igloo. And in fact, it warmed up a little bit today, and so my igloo started melting a little bit. So if you're concerned, you can tweet at me at Nathan Dawkin. You can also reach Ron at The Real Made. You can reach Van and tell him how much you miss him at Manly Van Lee. And of course, if you want to tweet the podcast, we are at NastyCastPod on Twitter. And our great host for the day, you can find on Twitter at GJewitt9. And let's see, what else? Please rate and review us on iTunes if you like the show. Give us a little 5-star bump there that helps us move up the old ratings there on iTunes. I don't know, they've got some kind of algorithm that, I don't know. If you review the show, it helps us. That's all I know. And if you also like the show and you want to help us out a little bit, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/nastypod. So you can give us a buck a month or something like that if you think that we deserve a little bit more than nothing. And also, you can listen to the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, which we will be recording right after this. And we will be talking, what are we talking about this week? I've already forgotten. Oh, the Astros and...
And the Diamondbacks.
Diamondbacks, yes. The top five prospects each. Yes, yep. Sir. So we have that to look forward to very shortly. So some plugs before we get to the show proper. Ron, what do you got coming out this coming week?
I just posted yesterday another... installation of this Sabermetric notebook. I'm doing a Big Guy Fantasy Sports, just trying to kind of make some sense of some Sabermetric stats and just how they can easily be added to your draft plan, your draft process, because I know some of them are a little bit they sound a little bit complicated, but I'm trying to break it down just so you can add them in there easily and look for some value in your draft. Over Fantastics, we're finishing up the spring training previews, and so we've been doing our seasonal posts over there on our blog. I've also for the football people, I've been Bob Long and I over Big Guy Fantasy Sports have been doing the consistency football show. We moved that to Monday night. We just got talking last Monday night about all the free agency movement, because we had a kind of a couple weeks there where life kind of got in the way on Sundays and took a little bit of a break there as well. But Monday night we talked about all the different things that have been happening free agent wise, and so we'll be continuing to do that. I think Tuesdays the show will be up. So I think that's pretty much it. I don't think I'm missing anything. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, that works.
Yeah,
I'm still doing the team previews out at Razzball. Of course, at Fantrax, I'm continuing on with my Dudes and Don'ts series, which I am just about to wrap up this week. I've already put out my starting pitcher dudes, and the don'ts are going to be coming out on Friday, so you can look forward to that. Also, yeah, just this and Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, as if that isn't enough. So yeah. You can check out all of that work. And with that, let's take a break here and get into the closer preview. Enjoy the show.
Nasty. Nasty.
All right, and joining us now on the Nasty Cast, you know him from Fan Alarm, and he has also contributed to Rotographs. If you have been perusing their pages, you have definitely seen. I know I have, and that is Greg Jewett. Welcome to the Nasty Cast. It is fantastic to talk to you. First time guest on the show, so thank you for joining us. And we're going to start off by just making you so happy, talking about your TGFBI draft. The Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, of course, for those who don't know what we are talking about. You love your team, right?
Absolutely not.
So we can set this up a little bit. You and I were both in the same league. We were in League 3 along with Chris Blessing, Chris Welsh from in this league, the Welsh as he is known, Craig Mish, Donnie Miller from Friends with Fantasy Benefits, Frank Stample, Joel Hennard, Justin Vibber from Rotographs, Lar Michaels, M. Beller, I forget his first name. He works for
Michael.
Michael Beller, yeah, Michael. For Sports Illustrated. Paul Martin, Real Talk Raff, a.k.a. Slow Clock Raff, Sun from Razzball, And the Flex Capacitor, who I believe is someone else from Friends with Fantasy Benefits. So pretty pretty decent league. Go ahead and tell us about your experience. And looks like you had the third overall pick.
I did, and thankfully I turned on the spring training game, and your boy Francisco Lindor just let off with a home run, so that makes me breathe a little easier. But I had the third pick, and I was going between Trey Turner, Nolan Arenado, and Mookie Betts. I had it down to those three guys. I think people keep saying that, you know, you can't chase steals because power's on the way up, so steals kind of stayed at the same thing. But at the same token, I want to be in a pool of guys that had to target Delino DeShields or grab a late round speed guy. I did do a draft a preseason thing with a bunch of other writers where I tried to do a lineup layered with 2020 guys, but it came up too short of power as well. So it just seemed to me like there was no perfect way to get a team with speed and power, but at least having Turner with a chance to, you know, hit between maybe 15, 20 home runs and steal me between 40 to 50 bases with upside with health, that was the way I was going to go. And then as things progressed, it really changed. And, you know, you hear all of the people talk about, you know, and every draft is different. Well, this draft was very different there. As you and I have already spoken about, there were no bargains. You had to reach for people that you wanted. And if you thought you're going to be cute and get somebody on the way back, he disappeared from the queue. It was almost a guarantee. And that was great. I think the people in the draft were fantastic, and it really kept me on my toes, and it changed how I had to approach some things. So I went for power in places you don't normally get it. And then I tried to layer my lineup from there. So I do think I have a decent amount of speed and power. Might be a little bit of risk with batting average if a couple of people regress. But my pitching is not where I wanted it to be, but I'm going to try and take advantage of the daily lineups. And I have a couple more relievers and try and get a couple more strikeout upside guys in there.
Yeah, it was probably the toughest draft that I've ever had. Just speaking to what you said, I mean, there were no bargains to be had at all. It was really, really frustrating. If you were hoping for some guy to fall to you, it just was not going to happen. I did end up with Delino DeShields, a.k.a. Delino Shields deals. So there is that. I was a lot happier with my team than you were with yours. I was picking out of the 13-hole Chris Sale. I got him, and then I got Jose Ramirez on the way back. We actually haven't talked about my team on this show, I don't believe, but nobody wants to hear about my team. I did manage to get some of my guys, so there is that anyway. But yeah, I mean, there's trades too to be had in this league. So I'm really interested to see just exactly how active people are in this league, especially as far as trading is concerned. I'm also slightly terrified of Craig Mish being in this league because he has all this insider information. So I feel like he's going to fleece me at some point, knowing something that I don't. So I'm a little worried about that, but overall, I'm pretty optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be something we have to monitor. And Mish was one of the first ones to ruin all my plans because, as I told you off air, I kind of had, you know, I've done so many mocks with other writers and other things. You just get into a groove and it's like, okay, I'm picking third. So I got a chance at Donaldson and or Noah Syndergaard on the way back, and they were both gone in the second round before it even got to me. So it just changes everything that you do. So there was like not many comfortable picks, if that makes any sense.
Yes, I was very uncomfortable throughout the entirety of this draft. I was actually sitting on thumbtacks as well, so that didn't help. But
I'm uncomfortable just hearing about the draft, let alone drafting it.
Oh, it was terrible.
And I was next to Raf, which made for some slow times.
So you got some naps in between your picks then, is what you're saying?
Dockin and I had the two fastest average pick times in the draft, if you look at that. And then a lot of the people weren't even close to us.
That was another thing that kind of threw me off a little bit, is because it just took so damn long. I'm pretty sure we were the last league that wrapped up. And just waiting so long in between each pick, I just kind of felt disconnected too from the draft. So that like additionally threw me off. But enough about that. I suppose we've got a lot of news to get into. And unfortunately, as a Twins fan, we're going to start off with Jorge Polanco. crushing my soul. He's suspended 80 games for PEDs. So if we are looking, if you've already drafted him and you're looking either for a replacement, or perhaps if you're drafting this upcoming weekend and you're looking for somebody else sort of in his range to fill your roster, Greg, we'll throw it to you first. Who would you be looking at?
I wrote down three names. It just kind of depends on the depth of the league, but I put Ahmed Rosario, Kettle Marte, and Dansby Swanson, because they all kind of have a little bit of pop with some speed. And if you're replacing Polanco, that's why you were trying to get him anyways for the 15-15 with upside. And so those are the three names I honed in on. How about you?
Yes, I like to reach for Marcus Semien. He's my dude. I also like Ketel Marte. He was another one of my dudes, so I got no problem with him. I ended up with Addison Russell, I think, is going at a pretty reasonable rate as well. Mm-hmm. I ended up with him in the TGFBI. And if you're going even later than that, it's pretty ugly. So I would probably just end up drafting a little bit beforehand. If I had got stuck with Dansby Swanson, like you said, it's not the end of the world. I did end up with him in a draft or two this spring, but not ideal. I don't know exactly what he's going to give you. So I would be probably just drafting my shortstop a little bit earlier on than I had planned to otherwise.
Yeah, so I kind of looked at it a little bit. I looked a little further down the list, just if you wanted to wait on this a little bit. And I think you got to throw in there too the guy that's probably going to replace him, Eduardo Escobar, as far as I don't know necessarily if you're going to get 20 homers again from him, but he's a guy that I think is automatically going to get the time there. So he's a guy I threw in there. I also threw in Swanson as well. Not so much because I love him as far as what he's going to do, but I like that lineup a lot. And then another guy I threw in a little bit further down that's very, very quiet that you can get at a huge value to maybe give you a little bit of that production back is Freddie Galvis. Freddie Galvis is a double-digit homer and steal guy for the last few years, and he's somebody that you hear nothing about, and he could be had very, very cheaply. So that's kind of where I went with it.
And it is a good point about Escobar as well, just filling in. And, I had in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, so the Nick Gordon owner is Meat Market Mike, friend of the podcast. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's Gordon time. Good Lord, why can't I think of his first name now? D. Gordon's younger brother. Good Lord, why am I blanking on his name?
Nick.
Nick Gordon, it is. Yeah, so he's like, yeah, it's Nick Gordon time. No, it is not. I don't think this accelerates his call-up time much more at all. I mean, you're looking at friggin' Eric Ibar and A-Ray Adrianza, who are going to step in and fill in for a little bit extra playing time, and neither one of those are exciting in the least, fantasy-wise. So just a pretty big net loss. And some another net loss, I guess we could move on to someone else who I picked up in TG FBI, and that is Justin Turner. Really exciting. He's got a broken wrist, although it sounds like he might only miss 4 or 5 weeks instead of 6 to 9, as was initially suspected. So, Greg, where do you think that you would drop him to in drafts now if you were drafting this weekend? Where would you take Justin Turner?
I am a Justin Turner guy, but I think now this kind of drops him down into the probably the Kyle Seager, Adrian Beltre range. And even though I think both of them are probably a little too low based on where people seem to be taking them, I think that with the lost month, that's going to drop him down to at least that range with a chance to. I'd probably take Beltre over him. Kyle Seager and him to me would almost be a coin flip if I could find somebody to fill in. And it's funny you mentioned Eduardo Escobar, because I did take Justin Turner in my NFBC draft and hold draft champions team. So having him already gone, but luckily in the 37th round, I was able to get Eduardo Escobar to hopefully give me a month at third base until I can get Turner back in there.
I am right there with you. I was looking at the ADP on Fantrax earlier. He's at 93 right now. Obviously, that's going to drop a lot. Right now, he's sandwiched between Chris Taylor and Jose Barrios in the overall. I would probably drop him right about to where you said, right around like Josh Bell is at 163 if you're just looking at overall. So that's about where I think I would value him, and that is right around the Adrian Beltre, Joey Gallo range.
Yeah, same here. I'm not a Justin Turner guy anyway, so I'm not drafting him in any of my leagues if I can help it in the first place. So it didn't really affect me a whole lot, but I think that he is right there in that range. And I think definitely in an OBP format, I'm taking Gallo anyway above him. But when you look in that range, you got guys like Evan Longoria, Michael Franco a little bit further down. I'm definitely not taking them above him. But those guys in that range like Moustakas, like you mentioned, Beltre, Eugenio Suarez I'm going to take before him anyway, Todd Frazier in OBP. So, yeah, so there's some guys there that I'm definitely taking ahead of Justin Turner. But I don't like him anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
That is not a nice thing to say to Tormund.
I mean, he's probably a nice guy. He's an amazing beard. I love his beard, and that's great. But I just, fantasy-wise, I'm not a fan. I don't know.
Oh, exactly. And as a non-Thrones watcher, you don't even get the Tormund reference. So.
I don't. So when you say that, I'm completely clueless. So.
Oh, my God, me too.
Oh, my God. I'm hanging up on you guys right now.
Yes.
That's terrible company. I can't do this. Oh, yeah. And with the wrist injuries, too, you have to worry about his power output the rest of the way a little bit. That really tends to sap your power. So, yeah, just definitely sucks. But a bit of good news. How about that? Let's move on to Alex Cobb, who has signed with the Orioles. Hooray, he got $50 million. That's a pretty good payday over 4 years. Greg, is he draftable at all to you?
You know, it's funny because when we were doing the draft, when Chris Blessing took him on the turn, people were lauding picking Alex Cobb, and that was before we knew where he was going. And I don't know. I mean, he says he's going to throw the changeup more this year, but he had 128 strikeouts and 170-plus innings last year. I mean, Josh Hader can get that this year with 80 innings pitched. So I'm not a big Cobb person as far as targeting him in these drafts go. I mean, that ballpark is not a very good fit in my estimation, especially for like him and Cashner. I really don't know what they're doing with that pitching staff. I'm very nervous about what could happen with the Orioles, especially because I have a little Zach Britton exposure in my leagues. But, you know, when I went to XStats and I see that BB FIP of 4.45 compared to his 3.66 ERA, so if his expected ERA is almost a run higher before he goes to Baltimore, I'm nervous. And his expected home runs was 24.7. He only gave up 22 last year. You know, all of his expected stats were not in line with what he had last year. I mean, yes, the changeup can help mitigate some of those losses going there, but his changeup is really going to have to flourish if he's going to be a 12-team mixed league pitcher. And I don't think I would use him personally.
No, and he's had his fair share of injury concerns over the years as well. A lot of abbreviated seasons. Steamer projects him for 164 innings this year. K per nine of 6.43. Good walk rate, 2.58. A 4.82 ERA and a 1.40 WHIP. That doesn't give you the warm and fuzzies, and I don't know that I would take too much the under on that ERA. Maybe 4.5. Last year, 36.9% hard contact allowed. And like you said, going to Baltimore, one of the best hitters parks in the league, and of course the AL East in general is just not a great place to pitch. You count me out on Alex Cobb.
Ditto on everything that you said. The park thing really was a biggie for me when you come from the Trop, where you have kind of a favorable environment for pitchers, and you go to a launching pad like Camden Yards. I also don't like the fact that he pitched in the Trop and most of his games in the Trop, and he had a 37% hard contact rate. I think that's going to work against him a little bit. And I don't really know what you're going to get out of him that's going to be useful. You know, like you alluded to, the projections, all the projections essentially that I can see have him having an ERA over 4. And I don't know if these projections adjusted for his signing with Baltimore.
No, those were
Okay, so that's a 4 ERA before he even gets to Baltimore. So that's got to up that a little bit as far as projections. FIP and XFIP are over 4. I mean, I have him in one league, in my 19-team league. I had him before, and I think he's like my 7th or 8th starter. So, I mean, as far as I don't have to rely on him a whole lot, maybe if he has a nice road matchup, that might be a time that I might throw him in. But he's also walking a little over two guys per nine innings anyway, and just the homer, I don't know, just you put the whole thing together, I'm just not a fan of it at all.
Yeah, I think I would rather just roll with a high K middle reliever to try and, you know, suck you some wins and, you know, give you good strikeouts, good ratios. rather than take Alex Cobb. So let's move on to the bulk of the show, shall we? We're talking closers on this episode. It's enough news for 1 week. So let's start off with just some sort of strategy discussion for just closers in general for 2018. Greg, how are you handling the closer position this year?
Well, I'll take the cop-out answer. It depends on the draft. It's really going to be volatile this year because there's still so many teams this spring. You know, I kind of run a closer. I keep a Google Doc open for any of my followers. That's free. I try and update it all the time. And I've added a couple of columns this year as the bullpens keep evolving, which is just another monkey wrench in any of these theories, because there's a reason people are willing to pay the price for Kenley Jansen that they are, is because they know he gets the majority of the time in the ninth inning on a winning team. So it makes the appeal there. So as the bullpens continue to change, you know, I mean, I look at the Rangers last year. They lost 23 games, which they led or tied after the sixth inning. I mean, that's monstrous. Wow. Monstrous when you're talking about, you know, trying to get to the end of the season. I mean, even if you get those cut in half, that changes Texas' season last year. I mean, I know they weren't going to get ahead of Houston, but and then you go to the overall numbers. Saves, there was 97 fewer saves in 2017 than 2016, and it's the second year in a row that the numbers dropped since they peaked in 2015. So you know, it's been like in a 1266 to like a 1292 range. And last year it was 1,179 total. So there was fewer saves in 2017. There was more volatility with people doing it. Of the top 10 closers last year, five finished the season with the job that never lost it at any point. You know, Sungwon Ho lost his job. Edwin Diaz lost it for a spell. Rodas Chapman got demoted in August and got back there in September. Britton was out with an injury, and Melanson was out with an injury. So half of the closers finished with the job all season, half of the closers didn't. And that's kind of the nature of the beast now. And as the closer things change, I think that's what's making the ADP on them all over the place.
Yeah, and that speaks to my general strategy as well, which is cheaping out to keep it short. But I want to touch back on something you said. Did you say that there were 93 fewer saves last year?
97.
97. My God. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's twofold. It's the way teams are managing games now. And you know, it's just a matter of the people going out there and doing it. And sometimes even closer, if they get in trouble, they'll yank somebody else and get them in there. You know, the blown saves and things. It's a whole different, we're entering a different age with the analytics. So, and there's a lot of, you know, if you remember when Mickey Callaway got hired by the Mets, he came right out and was like, you know, I'm not into a traditional closer thing. I'm going to do my thing. And then 2 weeks later, he was backpedaling because the Mets front office opened up their dinosaur eggs and were like, Mickey, that's not how we do things around here. And he's like, well, Familia will get the majority of the opportunities. So, I mean, it's going to be every year is going to be volatile. So what you're trying to do is identify the guys with the least amount of warts with the best chance to return on your investment. And you're hoping to break even. I mean, Kenley Jansen, as great as he was last year at his ADP, pretty much broke even. I mean, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about closers, you know, I've heard Rob Silver talk about that as well. You know, it's just so hard to profit, especially on the top tier of closers. They have to be so good. I mean, last year, everybody thought that the big three of Jansen, Chapman, and Britton was as safe as you can get. One of them went wire to wire with the job.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I was listening to that, the Launch Angle podcast, shout out to them. Van doing that show as well, although he's not here tonight. But yeah, that when I heard Rob talk about that, it just reinforced, you know, what I've often felt is just not really stoked about investing in the higher end relievers. And, you know, as far as the drop in saves too, I wonder, and this is just the first thing that came to my mind, so maybe it's dumb, but maybe with the increased offense, the increased home runs, there's just fewer close games, you know, maybe games just get out of hand a little bit more than they have before, or at least for the last couple of years. And so instead of having the good relievers in, you just kind of have the mop up guys.
That's entirely possible. I mean, you know, I can't quantify why there was 90, almost 100 fewer saves from one season to the next, but you know, when the number, the NFBC top 90th percentile last year was 89 saves. I mean, it's just different. If you can get two really good closers and then kind of rotate a third guy in or have a Josh Hader in there to bump up your strikeouts and keep the ratios down, then you're probably living okay. And you don't have to sit on that closer train all year trying to recycle in the next guy.
Right. Yeah, and so last year, just one of my personal experiences in an NL-only league, I decided to pay up a little bit because it was NL-only, and you know, saves are that much harder to come into just because the player pool is cut in half. And so I decided to pay up for Jeurys Familia and Mark Melancon, which just worked out swell. So just reminded myself why I don't pay for saves. Not interested at all. That's definitely my overall strategy this year. If you get Kenley Jansen, I fully expect you to get elite ratios, get a lot of saves, get a lot of Ks, but there's so many other, you know, elite starters, both offensively and on pitching, that I'm just not interested in those high end guys. I'll gamble. That's one of my strengths in fantasy, is just, you know, rostering those handcuffs and churning and burning on the waiver wire and coming into saves over the course of the season. And that's one way where you can save money at the draft, just waiting on closer, just building up your offense, building up your starting pitching, and then you can draft some cheaper guys later on.
Mm-hmm. Nope, it makes sense. As long as you're willing to do it. There's some people who don't want to do that. That's what makes Kenley Jansen such a thing. So when I did my investing versus chasing column for Fantasy Alarm, it's almost this year, you're either paying or you're going to be possibly living on that treadmill all year.
Yeah, so I've kind of changed mine up a little bit because I was under the school of waiting on saves, and it seems like every time that I did that in any league, you know, we were kind of talking about, you know, when we were talking about your rosters earlier, how certain positions dry up really quickly, and I felt like that I didn't want to pay that price for those ultra premium guys that we talked about, the Jansons of the world and the Kimbrels and all that. And, you know, I would try to wait on those mid tier guys, and then all of a sudden, or wait for the tail end guys, and all of a sudden they were gone. And so I ended up getting nothing. Now it depends upon if it's a holds league as well. If it's a save holds league, I think that's a whole other can of worms. You can definitely neglect the saves a little bit more, but I think I'm going to kind of target some of those mid tier guys a little bit more than I have in the past, just because I don't want to get stuck not having any saves. So like I said, I'm not going to spend up, I don't think, for the top guys, but you know, outside the top five, I might go, you know, in the range of the Ozunas or the Cody Allens or Raisel Iglesias, Brad Hands in that region. Might go with some of those mid-tier guys that I like quite a bit, but I'm definitely not going to not draft closers, and I'm definitely not going to wait till the very end either. At this point, it seems like that always ends up burning me, and it's not worth for me yet. So I've found other positions that I think I can wait a little bit later on. I've definitely in the last couple of years devalued the catcher position, and so I kind of switched that back and forth as far as with that and the closers.
Yeah, and I hope so. I definitely think you can do some of that, and you know, depending on the draft you're in, if you can get a turn where you get like a Brad Hand and another guy that you're targeting, then you're getting strikeouts, even though he might not get every save for the Padres. You still got a great ratio pitcher that people don't seem to still realize, and then you build around that.
Well, and we're going to talk later on, too, about the handcuffs as well. And like I just did, Mike Neese over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports, you know, with Colby Conway and Bob Longer's league. And we just did that draft a little bit ago. And what I tried to do is I ended up, it's funny you said Brad Hand. I got Brad Hand and Ozuna as my two closers. But I also later on got Addison Chater, is a guy that I don't know if he's going to be, he's an elite setup guy right now. Who knows, Ron, he might move to that role as well. So I'm going to speculate on, because if you don't get saved from, still get some solid stats from strategy I'm going to try to deploy.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to look at some of the, closer landscape as a whole. And we're going to talk about, as Ron just alluded to, the top five closer handcuffs that we have. We're also going to talk about some deep league dart throws. So we'll be right back with that after this break.
Nasty.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Joe Pisapia. Baseball is back and so is the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 edition. This year, I've got Paul Spohr doing the starting pitching chapter. I've got Jake Seeley doing outfield profiles. I got Sammy Reed doing DFS. We got championships waiting for you. Go get it right now, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018, available on Amazon in paperback and for Kindle and on iTunes, because once you go Black Book, well, you know the rest.
All right, back now on the Nasty Cast, and we are eschewing ADP Wars this week, and I decided to change the name to Tier Wars, not because I'm crying, but because...
I was going
to
say, that sounds really sad. Like, yeah. Is that because the band's not here? We're having Tier Wars?
Yeah. Who can cry the hardest looking at this ADP? we're just going to go through, and it's not even tiers, really. I just went, we're going to look at 1 through 5, kind of group those guys, 6 through 15, and then 16 through 30, and sort of just talk about the committees at the end, and then roll on to the handcuffs from there. But let's start off 1 through 5. I probably should have opened up the Fantrax ADP because that is what we're using for this. But obviously, we got Kenley Jansen at the top as I pull it up. There we go. Craig Kimbrell at 2, Earl Deschat at 3, Corey Knebel right behind him. And then at number 5 is Roberto Osuna. So, Greg, is there anybody in this group that you're either afraid of or sort of targeting this year?
I'm a little afraid of Kimbrell, and it. Before you think I'm bananas, he's missed some time in camp already. He's never been proven to be a total healthy dude. Now, I was totally in on his bounce back last year, and now this year I'm on the opposite end. So it's different how closers, it's a year-to-year roller coaster. And just on the same thing, last year I was nervous about Chapman, and then this year I think Chapman's the better buy because he's been going cheaper than Kimbrell. And I think Chapman's either going to turn in like a career year or his arm's just going to blow up and he's going to miss the whole season. I think that's how volatile his outcomes could possibly be. The only thing I worry about with Knebel is the walk percentage. I mean, he was striking out tons of people, but that walk rate does give me a little caution to worry. And he always had health concerns come up through the Rangers system. And I'm in on Osuna. Three straight years of a whip below 1. He battled mental health issues. I know he had the 10 blown saves. But his numbers, when you look at his 2017 versus Kimbrell's 2016, he had better numbers in his underlying stats. So that's why I was willing to reach for him in the TGFBI.
The only one of these guys that I have ended up with in any of my drafts, and it was actually just a mock draft for the Lindy's Sports Magazine that was many months ago, it was Corey Knebel. Just the strikeouts are huge, and the walks are worrisome, but for the price, and his ADP is 77, that's about as high as I could go on a reliever, and he's going to get you, I would say, 100 strikeouts, and hopefully... Oh, yeah. Hopefully he whiffs enough guys to mitigate the walks, and the obviously the ballpark isn't great either, but team should be pretty good. So Corey Knebel would be the one that I'd be targeting with his price in this group.
I think as far as any concerns I have, I think Knebel would be my concern, just for the simple fact that he's got 1 year as an elite closer, or a solid closer, I guess I should say. He's maybe not on an elite level yet. Hasn't that great of a spring. Walks are up a little bit. I don't think it's a huge concern, though. I think that, the thing that is weird about closers, other than any position, is all the positions that we're drafting is the biggest crapshoot of them all. Because, I mean, when you go with top-level guys, Chapman, or Chapman, like Greg alluded to, lost the job a little bit last year as well. And so he's expected to be one of those guys that you pay up for, and you're expecting him to get you those numbers. And so I think Knebel would be the guy there. I'm going to throw Osuna out there, even though I really like Osuna. The guy behind him, who I might mention a little bit later, Ryan Tepera, he's a guy that had a really good year last year, and so he's a guy I think that might be able to step in if they need somebody to step in. But Ozuna's probably I'm kind of torn between him, because I think he's a guy that if he loses that job, he's got a solid guy behind him, but I don't know if I really see him losing that job. I actually really like him a lot, but I would say if concern wise Knebel's probably my guy out of those five.
Yeah, every time I hear the name Tepera, I just think of tempura and I get really hungry.
I think of Topanga.
Oh, well, she might make you hungry as well.
Oh boy.
So moving right along to RPs 6 through 15. So a much bigger group here. Obviously, guys with a little bit more of a question mark. But Greg, out of this group, who stands out to you?
I'm a Rivero guy. I love Felipe, and what's appealing about him is there's not a whole lot in that bullpen, even if he went through a rough patch, that the Pirates can really go to. So, I mean, he's about as secure as it can get. I love Brad Hand, except for the fact that his manager said sometimes they might use him as the effector, but, you know, we'll take that where it is. I still think he can get 30 saves with 100 strikeouts. He's one of the only pitchers that go back-to-back with 100-plus strikeouts as a reliever. And I do think Edwin Diaz bounces back this year, and Iglesias is solid. In the group, I'm nervous. I'm nervous about Giles. I'm nervous about Wade Davis. Giles, as far as the Brad Lidge effect, I'm worried about Wade Davis fly balls lately and going to Coors. And we already talked about off air why we're nervous about Alex Colome.
Yes. And I'm a great host. I should have probably rattled off these names before we started talking about them. But yeah, it's six is Felipe Rivero, and then Edwin Diaz, Cody Allen, Ken Giles, Raisel Iglesias, Wade Davis, Brad Hand at 12, Sean Doolittle, Alex Colome, and Hector Neris, rounding out the 5-6 through 15 there. And so, yeah, I'm definitely with you on Ken Giles. Man, I haven't been able to invest in him in any leagues ever since spring training like 2 years ago, and I was watching him, and he just – not only was he missing the glove, he was missing the glove by like 5 feet, and you could just see terror in the eyes of the batter because he had no idea where those pitches were going at all, and it's not like he's lobbing in Ephus pitches up there. He's throwing heat. So I felt bad for those guys, but ever since then, and Giles has, you know, continually had problems with his control, and we saw him really stumble last year too in the playoffs. So I'm definitely avoiding him. No thank you there at 9. Alex Colome, yeah, it's worrisome just because of a possible trade into a setup role. Just asked me about David Robertson last year. That worked out really well for me. That's actually the only guys that I really had standing out at my 6 through 15. But what about you, Ron?
I don't have any that haven't already been mentioned. Wade Davis, obviously, and I think everybody's kind of on the same bandwagon when you go to Coors. It's pretty proven. But also, too, he experienced a little bit of a decrease in velocity last year by about 2 miles an hour, so that's something that's concerning as well. And then, you know, as a Rays homer, we got to throw Colome out there just because he's probably going to be traded at some point. So, you know, like you said with Robertson, it's hard to invest in these guys anyway, but especially these guys that could get you maybe – they're projected to get 30 saves, but they could maybe get you 7 before they get traded to a setup role. So I had those two guys, but I don't see a whole lot in that range as far as I'm going to stay away from. Now, as far as targets, I definitely like Rivero. I'm a Raisel Iglesias guy as well. I think that I have him in a couple leagues, and I like what he puts up as far as from a relief standpoint. But I'm a Brad Hand guy too. I just hope that it's more of a thing where he does get obviously most of the save chances. I hope it's not a situational thing like Greg alluded to.
Yeah, and I think on a cheaper team like that, at least right now, they're trying to limit their spending to a certain extent, the Eric Hosmer contract notwithstanding. But I do think that Brad Hand will rake you in plenty of saves, even on maybe a little bit of a lesser team. Hector Neris out of this group, I've actually ended up with a couple times, probably because he's the cheapest at 164 as an overall ADP on Fantrax. But let's move on to 16 through 30, and we're going to kind of get into more of the handcuff guys and more of the elite ratio, you know, setup guys, fireman types. So I'll rattle off these guys here and then throw it to you, Greg. But 16, we have Hurys Familia, Brandon Morrow, Arodys Vizcaíno, Mark Melancon, Andrew Miller, Blake Treinen, Archie Bradley, Brad Brock, Greg Holland, as of yet unsigned, Kelvin Herrera, Shane Green, 27 is Brad Peacock, Fernando Rodney at 28, 29 is Dylan Betances, and 30 is Blake Parker. So a ton of different guys in different situations here. So who stands out to you the most here, Greg?
To like or dislike?
Just throw out everybody that you feel strongly about.
All right. You know, I kind of like Morrow. I just worry about the injury specter. So, I'm definitely tracking what he does in the spring. But his second half numbers are actually better than Wade Davis when you look at all the metrics, the guy he's replacing. I'm a Blake Treinen guy. I really like what he did in the second half last year. As a matter of fact, he had a better ERA minus than Raisel Iglesias or Cody Allen in the second half. He had a better whip than Rizal. No offense. I know you're not an Iglesias guy here. His strikeout minus walk rate was 19.2 in the second half once he was out in Oakland. Rizal was 20.1, Cody Allen 25.2. And you know, I think people are nervous about Yusmeiro Petit being out there. But Yusmeiro Petit and Emilio Pagan are out there. They're both guys that can go multiple innings, and that's for a reason because the A's have a young staff that they're going to need to protect. And even signing Trevor Cahill, I mean, he's not going to be able to go deep into games. So they're going to need those two guys to man the sixth and seventh inning to bridge the gap to get to the closer. So I'm not sold that Petit's in there to get saves. I think he's there to preserve the starting staff and give them two guys in the bullpen to give them length. And that's when we talk about how bullpens are changing. That's one of the ways. I think I'm being a sucker, but I'm kind of buying in on Kelvin Herrera, and I don't know why because he was horrible last year. And as much as I want to hate Fernando Rodney, if the Diamondbacks stuck with him that long, I can see the Twins being just as stubborn with him. So he's almost actually a bargain as bad as we all think he is. On the avoid end, I'm nervous about Vizcaino, and you'll understand that when I go through my handcuffs. Archie Bradley, the price he's going at, I just don't get it because I don't think they want him to close. They still want him to start someday, and it's, you know, as Jeff Zimmerman wrote his one column about, guys that usually transition the closer don't make it back to the rotation. Just look at Rizal Iglesias. Look at Aroldis Chapman. I don't think Arizona wants him there. They want him in that multi-inning role to go in where they need him, and I'm not sure he's going to get the saves. I'm a little wary of Shane Green and Blake Parker. They've already said he's been a mess this spring, and they're saying Bedrosian's ahead, so I wouldn't be picking him either.
Yeah, I like your point on Archie Bradley at 22. I don't think that he's anywhere near that job, to be perfectly honest, and they want to save some money. And he would be the one guy that they have to pay in arbitration for saves. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that they'll keep him in that setup role. It's just a question of Boxberger or Yoshihisa. So we'll see. We'll probably talk about that situation a little bit later on. I do like Melanson at 19 just because he's so much cheaper than he's been. Obviously, the terrible year last year that burned me, as I had mentioned. But I think that you know, with this price, it's not going to totally kill you if he misses half the season. So I'll shrug my shoulders and invest in him. Yuri's Familia as the 16th closer off the board. Puke City, like you mentioned before, like it might be a committee. I don't know if I believe that, but you know, that's what they're saying for now anyway. But he was just bad last year. A 5.47 walks per nine while dealing with surgery for a blood clot, 4.38 ERA, and his 30% hard contact, while that's like league average, that was 10% higher than it was for him in 2016. His swinging strike rate cratered. He rose 8%. People stopped swinging outside the zone. His swing rate went down by 12%. I mean, it's only 24 2/3 innings, but my God, that is just frightening. So we'll get to his handcuff a little bit later on. Kelvin Herrera, I'm actually buying into as well as the 25th closer off the board. He's cheap enough for me to invest in. You know, like you said, really fell off last year, but he's just 28 years old, so I think that he can bounce back. And he's really the only show in town, too, you know. So even though the team stinks, I don't think there's anybody really breathing down his neck. And I actually like Shane Green at 26. Might be a little bit of trade bait in the midseason, mm-hmm. but I think the skills
That's why I have trepidation, just because, yeah. You know, you're only going to get him through July.
Yeah, it's pretty assured, but I'll, you know, as at that price, I'm not too worried. You know, I'll find some replacement for him throughout the season. He actually did improve over the second half of the year too. The first half, his K minus walk rate was 12.4%. Second half, it went up to 15.9, and the ERA followed suit, 3.12 in the first half to just 1.98 over the second half of the season. So cheap enough for me. All those guys to invest in. What are you thinking, Ron?
I'm thinking you guys named every damn pitcher on this stretch, so there's really not anything left for me to say. What I will say, though, and I don't want to give away a couple of things we're going to talk about later on, but I will say I'm kind of lukewarm on some of these guys here because there's a lot of these guys that have really awesome set up guys in front of him, handcuff guys. So we're going to talk about those later. But among those, I'm a little shaky on Vizcaino. I like him, but I like the guy behind him a little more. Brandon Morrow gives me a little bit of pause because there's another guy I like in that pen as well. I will say, though, I like some Brad Brock, and I like Brad Brock just because I don't know what they're going to do with Zach Britton when he comes back. I mean, to me, coming off the injuries he's coming off of the last couple of years, they're pretty big injuries as far as a closer type that comes in and tries to throw hard in the late game situation there. So he's a guy I think that might last you a little bit longer than what you think. And to kind of go a little bit differently, you got Andrew Miller sitting there at 20. And Andrew Miller is a safe, you know, I alluded to earlier when you're kind of paying for those mid-tier closers. Yeah, I got a couple of those, but also I like to get these ratio guys. He's the ultimate ratio guy. He's the ultimate, you know, mid reliever if those are valuable in your league. And I feel like he can step in, you know, if Cody Allen gets injured or gets traded or whatever it may be. I don't think it's kind of like the Archie Bradley situation. I don't think they want him to necessarily close or they'd have him there, but he's a guy that if they need to call on for saves, you might get a couple here and there, but also you're going to get awesome ratios with him anyway.
Yeah. And just one counterpoint to that. The only reason I didn't bring up Miller is the only reason I like Andrew Miller, but this year you've got guys like Chad Green, Josh Hader, and Chris Devensky that are going a lot of picks behind him.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's why, as much as I love Miller, I'd rather have Josh Hader at the later ADP, because I think I'm going to get just as many strikeouts, if not a few more. Yeah, his ratios might be a little higher, but you know, I'd rather get a closer or take a chance on, say, Kelvin Herrera keeping his job at the point where Miller's going. That's just me. I could be totally wrong, but that's just my side of that one.
Yeah, that's a great point. And just because Van's not here, I'll say, Hater, barely knew her.
Oh!
There you go. I had to throw that in. So there's one guy I actually, you know, I didn't preface for anything outside of the top 30, because that's a lot of probably handcuff talk that we'll get to in a minute. But one guy who I think is going to actually be the closer, I really wanted to bring up, and he's listed as the 38th replacement pitcher off the board, and I've wound up with him a lot, and that is Joaquin Soria. And I really wanted to bring this up because Keith Farnsworth posted his bold predictions this very day on Fantrax, and he's all in on Soria, just like I am. He said there's he had a 370 ERA last year, but his FIP was 2.23, and that ranked 10th best last year among 155 qualified relievers, ahead of Cody Allen, Kelvin Herrera. I wanted to bring this up because this feels like a personal attack. Better than every reliever currently on the Twins. Thanks, Keith, who was on the show last week. You're gonna do me like that,
and for the last time ever.
Yeah, exactly. You will never be back on the show, Keith Farnsworth. We'll never have the podcast. But let's move on to our next segment. It's gonna be our top five closer handcuffs. Ron, I'll give you second bidding here, just because I feel bad for us taking all your guys. So you can go second after Greg. But Greg, we'll start with you. Your top five closer handcuffs this year.
Okay, well, I know Ron already alluded to, so I got to steal his thunder here. AJ Minter, I got him in the draft and Holt League that I'm in for the NFBC. I just, Aroldis Vizcaino just pushed too much traffic on the bases, and I've watched him just completely melt down a la AJ Ramos a few too many times. When I turn on the TV, I almost feel like I'm a jinx. I turn him on, and it's just like the whole thing goes under. Minter just was striking out everybody at the end of the year. I remember writing him up a couple of times at the end of the year bullpen reports, and the kid just throws fire. As long as that kid can stay healthy, I can't see Vizcaino holding him off. I'm a sucker for Keone Kila. I don't know why. There's just so much. He's only 24. It feels like we've been talking about him forever. He held guys to like a 110 batting average last year when he was ever on the mound. And Texas wants him to take that role. I just don't know if he can stay healthy enough to do it. I also like Drew Steckenrider down in Miami. I know most people are on Barraclough, but I'm on the Steckenrider side. So I'm going to ride or die with Steckenrider, and we'll see if that works out. I never know what the heck Mike Matheny's going to do with his bullpen, but I really think Dominic Leone's the best guy that he has out there to close games. So even if he doesn't start the year in it and they go with Gregerson, because he's the famous, he's closer experience and all that baloney. I still think Leon will get that job after about a month or so and take it and run if he gets the opportunity.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So I'm
Go ahead, Ron.
Thank you. I appreciate the chivalry. It is definitely chivalry's not dead on the podcast.
That's right.
All right, so I'm going to go – let's see here. You mentioned A.J. Minter, and I looked at this, and I tried to go with guys that weren't just the ones listed right after them on the depth chart, and it's hard to not go with a couple of those. But a guy that I went with in Chicago, Carl Edwards, is a guy that I think definitely has closer upside. It's just he's got to limit the walks a little bit. He averaged over 5 walks per 9 innings last year. That's definitely not going to get you a closer job, but he did average almost 13 strikeouts per 9 innings. So that's a guy that I like.
Well, plus, I don't know if I like him that much just because he's always off making hamburgers in between outs.
Well, I was trying to think of, we've got to think of a cool name for him as far, can we call him the Thick Burger maybe? Is that the?
Ooh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Perfect. All right. Good. We did it. That's the Carl's Jr. Burger, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Perfect.
Although in the Midwest where I live, it's Hardee's.
It's Hardee's here too. I actually ate Hardee's last week for the first time in about 10 years.
So. Oh man, dude! When I was like 10 years old, I had strep throat coming on right as I was out eating at Hardee's, and I just chucked it all over the place, and I wasn't able to eat Hardee's for 10 years after that. No joke.
Do you think based on that story, you'd be able to eat Carl's Jr. then?
The person or the burger?
Well, I'd hope the burger.
I've eaten Hardee's plenty over the last couple of years, I'm back on that horse.
That'll happen. It'll ruin it for somebody. So yeah. Okay. All right. So anyway, I'm glad that we got that out of the way. That we got the nickname connection there.
Yeah. Right.
Another guy that I threw out here is I just kind of looked for guys that maybe had some experience and had some shaky guys in front of them. And a guy that you mentioned, Nate. Not that I don't like Melanson at the value, but he was a little shaky last year. He's coming off a surgery on his right forearm. And so Sam Dyson's a guy that they have there. Now, I know he's not been stellar in the past as far as in the relief roles. And he did have a nice season in 2016 where he was the closer, but he still walked a few too many guys. And we alluded to the fact that we talk about the Rangers bullpen all the time.
A lot.
And so that's another guy that we mentioned before that, you know, just I don't know if it's something just bad mojo with the Rangers bullpen or not. A couple other guys I'm going to mention real quick, too, because I try to go down the list a little further and not just pick the next guy up. I put Josh Hader on there. I don't know. Once again, it's kind of an Archie Bradley situation. I don't know if they really want him there. I think he definitely has the stuff to be able to do it. I also threw Sergio Romo on there in Tampa because if Colum gets traded like I think he will, he's a guy that's got a little bit of experience in his back pocket, could step up, and the Rays have no problem giving guys auditions at different spots, whether it be offense or defense. I mentioned Ryan Tepera earlier. He had a nice season last year. And then the last one I'll throw out there is Ryan Madsen as well. Another guy with some closing experience in a situation where I think there's 3 or 4 guys in that bullpen that could take that job.
All right. My top 5, you got number 1. I also had Keone Kela on my list. I'm not completely sold that he's not the closer even going into the season just because they have, you know, I think that Claudio makes sense as sort of a multi-inning guy with the skill set that he possesses. Keone Kela is more of that back end guy, but he's like you said, he's had the injuries and then he's also got to keep his head on straight too. So there's that. Number 2, Nate Jones, who it would be the guy, I think, if Joaquin Soria doesn't get the job. You know, Juan Manaea was there last year, but he's not really like the all caps closer type. Nate Jones seems to be back and healthy again, and he's racking up some strikeouts now in spring training, and his numbers could be really, really nice. If he did get that closer job, he would be a lot more exciting from a strikeouts and ratio standpoint than Joaquin Soria. Then number 3, I have AJ Ramos. I touched on my distaste for Luis Familia this year and a potential committee. So Ramos could come into some saves, even though he walked the farm last year and he will kill your whip, but, you know, saves the saves. Addison Reed, I have at number 4. Just because, you know, Fernando Rodney is his only roadblock, and Fernando Rodney is Fernando Rodney, and he's 41 years old, so it's more likely than ever that he will just kind of fall off like he has before, and, you know, his course will not correct the way that it did last year.
Homer.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Byron Buxton can only leap so high. Can't keep all of those balls in the yard. And then number five, I have Yoshihisa Hirano out in Arizona. That's, you know, one of those bullpens that's sort of in flux. If Boxberger, I think his velocity's been a little bit down. He's been nursing an injury. Hirano hasn't been great himself overall, but, you know, contract-wise, they've got him locked down, and so I wouldn't be surprised if he got some saves at some point this season. My early money was on Boxberger. Like I said, you know, he's got some injuries, had a, you know, little dust up here and there. So a dart throw handcuff would be Hirano. And then just since nobody really brought it up, well, I guess Dominic Leone did get a mention earlier, but Tyler Lyons I've ended up with a lot. Unfortunately, it sounds like Leone would be the one to own there if Gregerson isn't the guy, and it's looking more and more like he's not. So if Leone has been taken, then I would throw a dart at Tyler Lyons as well, who honestly he was pretty good ever since transitioning to a reliever. So let's move on to our final segment. This is going to be fun, a deep league dart throw. So just a super off the radar guy that a bunch of stuff has to break right for this guy to get saved. But if you're in like a 50 team draft and hold type, this is the kind of guy that you're going to be looking at as a total long shot. So Greg, back to you on this one. Who do you got for us?
I actually got a couple, but we'll see what happens here. I'll give some reasoning. I think this is the year we find out that Joe Jimenez is not just a quad A pitcher, but he will actually figure out how to get some major league hitters out. And when the Tigers trade Shane Green, they're going to give him a chance in the closer role. So I could see 10 saves after the trade deadline. Way off of the reservation, I think you can see Jimmy Scherfe maybe at some point this year in Arizona find himself into some save situations. Kirby Yates will be there for a couple of saves when they do use Brad Hand as an effector instead of a closer when they need a couple of outs in the seventh or eighth inning to try and win a game. If anything happened to Craig Kimbrell, don't forget about Carson Smith on Boston. And if Keone Kila ends up getting hurt like he almost does every year, if Jose Leclerc ever figures out how to throw strikes, he has three pitches that qualify on Brooks baseball with a 50% whiff per swing or higher. I mean, the guy's got filthy, filthy stuff. He just can't throw it over the damn plate. Oh, and as for your Mets thing, I'd almost bet that Anthony Swarzak could get as many saves as AJ Ramos, but I'm just spitting here.
All right, Leclerc, we got to mention him. What's his nickname? The French croissant?
Yeah, the Texas croissant.
Texas croissant, that's what it was.
Texas croissant, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God, we talked about it so much last year. We were all pulling for him to close last year. So
does croissant mean free pass?
Yes, it is French for free pass.
I think it means plunked batter.
God, yeah. The guy's so good. Just throw some strikes. He's only 24 also. I was looking at his numbers today. He was going, how is his FIP and ERA being so bad? All of his stuff is just filth. Get rid of the sinker, throw more of your off-speed pitches, and get that splitter in the dirt. My God.
I think the Rangers should just hire you as pitching coach at this point.
What
are they doing down there? They don't know.
Yeah, there's got to be something. There's got to be something in the water or in the coaching, or maybe there's like a dead in their bullpen.
I think that they just their coaches meetings, they just get together at a table and shove as many hot dogs down their throats as they can in one sitting. And there's no conversation whatsoever.
I love it.
Okay, deep league dart throws. I'm going with Dave Paulino 43 right now. Real long shot, obviously. You know, I told you how much I don't like Ken Giles, and Paulino is currently a starting pitcher, but they're good, and they've got Peacock who could slide in there too. I think that they eventually move Paulino to the bullpen, and he could potentially get some closer, some saves. 97th replacement pitcher off the board. And then there's also, like, on the same team, James Hoyt, who's not even on the roster because of an oblique strain. But last year, 9 innings with a 12.04 K per 9, a walks per 9 of 2.55, and a 3.11 xFIP. 17.5% swinging strike rate was third best among qualified relievers, and he's not even part of the bullpen right now. So that's another dark horse. And then I also mentioned Kirby Yates and just how outstanding he is. If Brad Hand does go down with injury, or if they decided to just shuffle that bullpen for no apparent reason, he would be a great closer. He had the fifth best zone contact rate among qualified RPs, 74.2%, and he also had a huge swinging strike rate, 17.4%. And of course, you know, the strikeout rate last year was not bad either, 13.98 K per nine. So not too shabby.
All right, so I'm going to go with a couple of guys from the same team here that I think either one could essentially step up and get some saves here just because of the situation. And I'm going to do this kind of in honor of Van as well, who's not here. So I'm going to go with the Angels bullpen here. And they've got a couple of guys there that I think are a little bit intriguing. And now we know Cam Bedrosian is probably going to be the guy that gets the job. But behind him, they signed Jim Johnson. And Jim Johnson's a guy that I had forgotten until I looked it up recently that has a couple of 50 save seasons. Now, I know he's not a young guy, but still has a little bit of experience in that role. He's a guy that could step in and get it done. And then they have another guy that could step in and maybe take that role as well, whether it be injury, whether it be trade, whatever. And that's Keenan Middleton, who's a guy that was in the pen last year and averaged better than a strikeout per inning. Pitched 58 innings out of the bullpen. He actually had 10 holds, so he could be a guy that you might look at for holds as well. And then to go way off the reservation here, and we keep talking about that Rangers bullpen, and I kind of did this, you know, just because of it's the Rangers bullpen, and we like talking about him. Threw Tim Lincecum out there. I know he's not going to be ready for the start of the season, but, you know, late, he's worth a dart. And then if you want to go super – way deep guy that, you know, needs probably a lot of things to go his way in that Rangers scenario, which honestly is not all that far-fetched, I don't think, with the way that they do their relievers, as we just alluded to. I threw Hans Kraus on my
Hans Kraus
as well. Hans Kraus. I mean, I know he's 19, but the dude throws gas. I mean, he had the 30-7 strikeout to walk ratio, 109 batting average against in the low minors. So he's got a long way to go, but who knows with the shit sandwich that their bullpen is.
All right, boys. Well, that's going to wrap us up. First ever closer preview that we've done, Greg. I think it went really well. Thank you so much for joining us. So before we get out of here, go ahead and tell our listeners where they can find you out on social media and plug anything you got coming out.
Well, I'm in the middle for Fantasy Alarm doing a bunch of player profiles for Howard Bender over there. My handle is at GJEWETT9. I also keep the closer page like they were talking about, and it even has James Hoyt on it. If you want to check that out, I'll tweet it out after the podcast goes live so people can check it out. A lot of my followers bookmark that and check it during the season to see what's happening coming up around the bend. And my bullpen reports in the preseason, those are free. They're not behind the paywall, Fancy Alarm. Those have been coming out on Friday, and I'm hoping to be in the rotation on Rotographs doing some of the bullpen reports there too for Spore and those guys. So thanks again for having me. I've known you guys for a long time, but the first time being on a podcast with you was a blast, and I appreciate you thinking of me.
All right, we'll definitely have to have you on again, man. Good times, good conversation, and you definitely know your closers. So next week, I don't really know what we're doing, Ron. We haven't talked about that a whole heck of a lot. It's going to be the eve of the season.
Can we do like our favorite like outfielder lists or something?
We just do our best, like our top nicknames that we've come up with.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
We'll come up with something. So until then, folks, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.